We're here with Charlie Cowden. He's a member of the Alamo Crazies group, which began as a running group back in the mid-70s and continues to this day. We have some of us that run, we have some of us that bicycle, we have some of us that walk, and some just show up for coffee. There's currently 30 to 35 members of us in the group, and we range in age from probably mid-50s up into the 90s. And the audience for this interview is the rest of the group and anyone that each member wants to share their interview with. Today is the 7th of October. I'm Brian McCall. I'm 64 years old. We're doing this interview in Alamo, California. And Charlie, I'm going to ask you to tell us your age.
Right. Yeah.
And the first question is going to be, how did you get involved with the Alamo Crazies?
Right. Well, I am 74, so I'm a little older than you are, Brian.
A little bit.
And I got involved with the Crazies through Dennis Simpkin, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
And everybody in Crazies knows that Dennis was my client. As an accountant, I did his and Susan's taxes kind of forever. And
is that going to be one of your stories, by the way, later on? Okay, just
check. But I have been a runner kind of since my mid-20s. And I was in the Army Reserve for a long time, and they sent me off one summer to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And back in those days, when you ran or did any physical exercise, you did it in combat boots.
Right.
And they got us out there every day, and we had to run 2 miles a day in combat boots. And it almost killed me the first time, as you can imagine. By the end of 2 weeks, it was not too bad, because I was young. Right. And I thought, you know, I don't ever want to go through this again. and I ran a little bit. I ran 1 year of track in high school. Very poorly. Never won an event. But I did. I had a little bit of background that way. So I was running on my own, basically. And had lunch with Bubba one day, and I was telling him about running, and he was talking about running. And he said, "Well, you ought to come out and join."
He was already one of your clients.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bubba's been a client of mine for a long time. Okay. Or was a client of mine, like, from the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so this was about mid-90s. I think I got in the group about 93 or 94.
Okay.
Something like that. And so Dennis invited me, and I came out, and I thought I was a fairly good runner. And what I found was these guys were really good runners compared to what I was. And particularly right. things like hills, you know, things that
yeah, you were running on the road,
yes.
Fairly flat before.
And as you know, once you become a crazy and once you get used to the hills, you realize that's just what you do.
Yeah.
But the first few times, it really is something. And so I came out with a group and I did my best. But one of if I were to kind of characterize what I add to the group, and that is I'm always the slowest runner in any group there, so everybody feels good about themselves because anytime I'm there.
Not quite true, but all right, we'll let you say that.
So I ran with them, you know, during the week, and it in those days we met every single, you know, it was Tuesday and Thursday we met at Benham Court, and then yep. Wednesdays and Sundays we ran from White Cliff,
right.
And then on Saturdays we went wherever we went. And so I ran on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and on Sunday, but I was so intimidated about a
Saturday
right.
run. You ran a number of times during the week before you ever ran
yeah,
Saturday.
Yeah, before I ever ran a Saturday.
That's unusual.
Because I, quite frankly, was just afraid they'd get me out there and I'd either die or never get back. So then I kind of drifted away a little bit. And Clark was a partner with a fellow at Price Waterhouse who then ultimately became my partner in business. And
uh-huh.
And so one day, my partner brings in this guy. He says, "Oh, I want you to meet this fellow that was a partner with me in San Francisco." And I look up and it's Clark Nelson. And Clark says, "Charlie." And so he kind of encouraged me to get back out at it again.
So how long do you think you took off?
Oh, I probably, you know, it was 8 or 9 months or
oh,
something like
okay.
that, you know, where I just kind of disappeared. And I thought,
right.
you know, I'm not good enough to be in this group. And So then I finally tried a few Saturday runs and realized I could survive and what
yeah.
have you. And then by that time, then you're hooked. You know how that is.
Definitely.
And without question, the Alamo Crazies has been a huge find in my personal life and my social life. I mean, very few guys have a group of 30 or 35 people right. that they can just kind of hang out with. Boyfriends, that's what Virginia refers to them as my boyfriends, right?
Sure.
And that's unusual for men to have a group of boyfriends like that to yeah. hang out with.
Yep.
So that's been a great find that way.
And we're talking 30 years now.
Yeah,
right.
So I think of myself as somewhat of a newcomer because, as you said, you know, they've been running for 15 or 20 years before I came.
Some had, yes.
But now you think about a mid-90s, that's 30 years I've been with this group. Yeah,
so definitely.
Kind of cool. So I've got three stories that come to mind about the Alamo Crazies. The first is that, as you know, we were pretty good runners, and you know, we ran a lot, and sometimes on a Saturday, it wouldn't be that unusual for us to go like maybe 10 miles or something
sure.
like that.
A couple hours.
And yeah, be out there for a couple hours. And so the group decided one day, probably on about a Wednesday, that we were going to run a half marathon, the Primos half marathon, on Sunday or whenever, whatever day it was. Oh yeah, everybody signed me up. So I'd never, ever done a half marathon. And so then we start there in Danville by the Primo's Pizza place, and we end up in a shopping center someplace down in Danville. I don't even know where, or maybe it's down close to Crocane. It doesn't matter.
Right.
So we take off, and I'm going along, and at mile six, you know, Joe's out there yapping, and I'm running right along, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm feeling pretty good. This is going to be okay. And then about mile eight, Joe disappears, and I'm just out there. And then Larry catches me from behind, and he passes me. And so the joke in the crazies was, by the time we got to the finish line, I was absolutely the last crazy there. And the finish line was up just a very gentle slope, and it couldn't have been more than 100 yards.
Yeah.
And I turned that corner, and everybody was standing at the finish line, and they started placing bets on whether I'd even be able to make it up the hill and finish. And I did make it across the finish line, but oh man, I tell you, I was wasted. And then I had ridden with, I had left my car down at the first start line, and right. so I rode back with Bob and Linda Shaw, and I was in the back seat of this car, and my legs were kind of cramped. By the time we got back to my car, I literally had to kind of lift my legs out of the car. I was so sore. So that was my first experience with a half marathon. I've never run a marathon.
Okay, and you'd done no training.
No. I mean, it was just like I say, it was a typical crazy sort of a thing.
Right.
Oh, hey, let's run this half marathon, you know, like 2 days later or something. And so, you know, okay, I'm in.
So, I love it.
So it's typical.
You've done another half marathon.
I've probably done seven or eight half marathons.
Wow.
But I've no marathons.
Okay.
So and the one I love the most is the one that the Lake Chabot.
That's what I figured.
And it's just spectacular.
It's really spectacular. It's the hardest.
It's the hardest. There's no question. But after my first experience, I learned my lesson. That, you know, I needed to take it a little more seriously than I had before. So that was kind of fun. And then another story that just I don't know why it sticks with me so much, but you know how we would just run. You just show up and you'd run, and weather was irrelevant.
Right.
And it made no difference what time of year it was. And if it was muddy, we just did it, right?
Yeah.
And I was out there with the guys, and I was behind Clark, and we were out there somewhere, and we were making this kind of left-hand turn to head down Clark's Revenge into Pine Canyon.
Okay, some picture.
And we're coming along, and Clark steps down into this mud puddle, and it just sucks his shoe right off of his foot. And he makes about two strides in his stocking feet before he realizes he doesn't have a shoe on. And literally, it was just completely buried. It was the first time I'd ever seen somebody's shoe get sucked right off of their foot.
I love it. And
you know, the other thing, of course, as you can appreciate too, probably, is that, you know, Clark is just a great guy, but he has this kind of clueless innocence about him, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, he takes two steps and you kind of like, something's wrong, you know, but he doesn't really realize what's happened to him. That was great fun. Oh boy, we had fun with that one.
That was Mutters, I guess we call him. And he was at the top of his revenge.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember how that became called Clark's Revenge? I don't know that story.
The story that I think I know, although you know me, I make stuff up sometimes.
That's good too.
You know, there was this fellow named Rip who I never met, but Rip was like just kind of this crazy runner. I mean, he was just
really strong,
and really serious kind of about it, right? And there are two stories I know about Rip. One was that Jim Becker beat him up a really steep hill one time, and it made him so mad. I think he quit the group at that point.
I've heard that.
Yeah. But the other is that I think Clark and Rip were heading up. They're heading up out of Pine Canyon on what's called, we call Clark's Revenge, and I think Clark
beat him. Did he really?
Yeah. And which, you know, we all kind of say the same thing.
Because Rip was known. It's amazing. Right? And it's like, it'd be like Clint.
Yeah, and very competitive too, you know. Yeah, and Clark is a good runner, and particularly when Clark was a young man, he was a good runner. But he's not competitive.
No, he's not going to care.
No, he's not going to care. But you know, there is that side of Clark, I think, that maybe he thought, you know, I might have a chance here. So at any rate, that's what I think. That's what the story I heard. So you might check with somebody else if you go through some of these interviews.
All right.
But but we all know it as Clark's Revenge, and we all know exactly where it is.
We do, exactly.
So, yeah, and that's kind of fun, too, all these places that are out there that we've somehow put a name on or a tag.
Yeah, several of them. Yeah. Actually, most of them, not the real name.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. But we all know them that way.
Right,
we all know them that way, sure, yeah. And then one other story that kind of comes to my mind is the fact, once again, rain or shine, no matter what, and we used to run to the top of Mount Diablo twice a year on Clark's birthday in September.
And didn't know it was Clark's birthday. I always thought of it as Labor Day.
No, it was September 22nd. That's his birthday. And the only reason I know it's his birthday because I just remember the date because that's when we would run up Mount Diablo.
Huh.
And then, of course, New Year's Day. And one time we went up New Year's Day and it was just pouring rain. And the wind was blowing like crazy. And that's when we started down Machado Ranch. Yeah. So that was pretty long runs in those days.
You started at the beginning of it was really tough.
Yeah. And then you're going up Wall Point. Yeah. And you get to Wall Point, and then there was a real steep hill that we called Thistle Hill.
Right.
And literally the wind was blowing so hard, we were kind of all down on our hands and knees going up Thistle Hill because it was just blowing that hard. And then you get up further along that Red Rock Road and you kind of cut across on a single track. And at one point I'm thinking, it's just like the rain was, it was raining so hard and the wind was blowing so hard that the rain was coming uphill. And it was and it was so much, I put my hand up against my face to block the paint. I thought it was hail, but it was just rain, but it was blowing that hard. And we got back and we got in the bus and poor old Rick Shaw, he, you know, skinny little guy that he was, he had kind of hypothermia and we couldn't get him warm. And he was shivering the whole way down. But then, you know, at the top of Mount Diablo, they have like a wind gauge or something. And you can go on some website somewhere and it'll show you the maximum wind speed each hour. And so somebody did that, and it maxes out at 100 and stops. And for like 6 hours straight, it was 100 mile an hour maximum. And that was the day we were running up Mount Diablo. And it's just so indicative of how we were just good runners.
We were good runners. We were crazy, obviously.
We were, yeah.
I mean, I was part of that run too.
Yeah.
And I remember the very beginning of it because we didn't have the wind on the right at Mississippi Ranch, right? It was down low. And I remember even that took us twice as long to get up that first hill. Same, like you were describing, almost hands and knees.
Yeah.
Not because of the wind there, but because of the mud.
Mud, yes. And that's the other thing. It gets slippery and going up Wall Point up there. You know, it was. It was really
miserable. I love that story because, we had lots of good runners. We had slower runners. I was in the slower group also.
Yeah.
but we did a lot of different things. The fact that we did that.
Yeah.
Why? Nobody would, in their right mind would have been out there.
No. And you know, I'm sure all of our wives, you know, it's easy to say why are we crazy, you know, because it's like, and we get done and we think, wasn't that fun? And we're all just high-fiving. And, you know, our wives and everybody else are looking at us like, you're out of your mind.
It would, I guess that run, we must have already had rented a bus coming back.
Yes, yes.
And just imagine how muddy and what a mess that bus was after we were done with it. I do remember coming down on some of those in the bus, and not that it was, I would usually notice this, but the smell was so bad with all of us in that bus.
I never thought of it, but yeah. It had,
remember
it had
that?
To be
I remember
awful,
consciously going, oh my God,
yeah,
I can't
open a window or something.
Yeah, yeah. We were. Yeah. Although that day we didn't because
no, because it was so cold. Yeah, yeah. That but was, it was, and that's kind of, to me, is just indicative of the whole group of the other thing, too, is as you're talking about it, I mean, we got guys like Clint who are really, really good runners. You know, you and I couldn't. We in our best day of running ever in our life, we never could be half of what Clint is just normally.
Right.
But yet, we all ran as a group. We all got together and, you know, we worked it out. And it was really a collegial group. It was fun. It just made the whole thing really fun.
When did you quit running? How long ago?
Well, I kept running. I up through...
Just
2020. Like,
it was
COVID. You know
years.
What it was, Brian? It was COVID. And it was right about January or February. And it had been a little bit of rain and stuff. So I was running the Iron Horse, but I kept saying to myself, you know, I gotta pick my mileage up a little bit here. I wanna kinda get back. And we were doing like 3 miles a day. And I'm thinking, okay, I gotta get up to 5 miles again and I gotta start quitting being so lazy. And literally my knee just gave out on me.
Yeah,
my right knee just absolutely gave out on me. And I've got a drawer full of different sleeves and things that I tried. I've tried them all. And it got to the point where during COVID we would go down there and get a cup of coffee at Bagel Street, and then we'd sit out on those planter boxes there by Rite Aid and stuff because we weren't supposed to go in anywhere.
Right.
And I would come in and I'd sit down and then I'd stand up and it would take me, you know, 3 or 4 minutes to be able to kind of get my legs straightened and be able to put weight on it and stuff like that. And I thought, oh man, this
and
is
you knew you had to stop this.
Yeah.
And so then, you did run, though, the beginning of COVID. You were still running.
I was still running.
Probably mainly Iron Horse by that time.
Yes, by that time I was primarily Iron Horse, yeah.
Okay.
And so then my knee just got to the point where I couldn't do anything. And then typical, everybody said, oh, well, you need to, you know, it's sciatica. You should go and see a chiropractor and... I don't know if you know who Shannon is or not, who runs Iron Horse or used to run Iron Horse.
Yes, I do.
Well, interestingly enough, I'm hobbling down the Iron Horse one day and Shannon comes running up behind me and stops and goes, well, what's wrong? I said, I just got this problem. I said, I don't know if it's my knee or sciatica or what have you. She says, oh, you know, my husband's a chiropractor. So I've always had no regard for chiropractors.
Right.
Never used one, but you know, here's this pretty blonde telling me that, you know, that her husband's a chiropractor. And so I actually went and saw her husband and got my back popped a couple of times and it didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of then walked. I just basically became a walker through COVID and through the summer. And finally, Virginia just said, you've got to go. Let's just call and just go see this guy, Dr. Saw, down in Hayward. And let's just see what he has to say. Because I had gone to another guy who was a member of our club at Muir Orthopedic.
What's his name?
Dave Contreras.
Okay.
So, and Dave had set Virginia's arm when she fell and broke her arm and stuff. And I had been to see Dave a couple of times with my knees and what have you. And so I went to see him first. And the reason I went to see him is we were out at Contra Costa one day. And he said, Charlie, what's wrong with you? He says, you can't walk. I said, well, so it's my knee. And, you know, I just kind of got a little problem. And he said, listen, he said, I want you call my office, and I want you to come in and I want to take a look at this. And he said, no, don't call my office. He says, even I can't get through the switchboard. He says, I'll have my nurse call you and schedule an appointment. So sure enough, about a week later, I get a call from Dave Contreras' nurse, and I go in and they take pictures of my knees and everything, and I'm sitting in the room waiting for him to come in and talk to me about what's going on, and I can hear him and the nurse out there, and they're laughing about my x-rays. He says, I've never seen anything like this in my whole life. I'm thinking, this doesn't sound real good. And so he comes in and he says, you know, you're screwed. You got bone on bone, and you got arthritis. And by the way, your kneecaps are pointing sideways rather than straight, and that's what we were laughing about and everything. And he said, I'll give you a cortisone shot, and then you can think it over. So he did. He gave me a cortisone shot.
Yeah.
And it helped, but it didn't really. Right. Some people get cortisone shots, and it's like they've got a new lease on life, and that was definitely not me. It wasn't as painful, but it still didn't change anything. I still couldn't run.
Sure.
But then I just got thinking, you know, I'm not sure. I know Dave as a socially kind of, right? Yeah. I see him at the club two or three times a week, and he's really collegial and nice and all that stuff. But a surgeon, I kind of want somebody that really, really is focusing on my surgery. I don't want a buddy. I want the best, right?
Sure.
And so then I put that off, and then it was Virginia finally said, look, you got to go get a second opinion. And that's when I went down to see Dr. Saw, because all of us have been to either Saw or Dearborn. And I went in, and so I called, and thinking, oh, it'll be 6 weeks before I get in, and then it'll be 6 months before I get scheduled. And they said, oh, yeah, we got an appointment next Thursday. So next Thursday, I mean, because I'm sure it was because of COVID, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm in there on Thursday, and we get the x-rays from Contreras' office, and he looks at me and says, yeah, you've got bone on bone and arthritis. And he says, there's no hope. There's nothing can be done. And so I said, well, okay, let's just do it. You know, you just got to do it. I might as well just get it over. Thinking, once again, it's going to be six or eight months out, right? So next thing I know, I get a call from his office. Oh, well, we got an appointment in like 2 weeks.
Right.
And whoa, so yeah, there I am. I'm in and I'm out and had the surgery. And you know, you and I have talked about that. And it's been super successful.
I know, very successful.
Very successful.
Most of us have had success. So, you know,
yes.
A couple not quite as good, but right. I'm...
Yeah. So
I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah.
So, but we still can't run.
No, I really can't. And it's interesting because the whole thing of the group and the friendships and all of the stuff, I still miss running. I really miss running. You know, and it's just not the same. And as you know, I tried some mountain biking, but you guys are way too good on the mountain, too strong for me. And now
thank you for lumping me in there,
in all seriousness, before the electric bikes, you know, Scheffler and all those guys were miles ahead of me. I'm totally chicken going down a hill. I really am. So I've kind of reached the point of saying, you know what, I'm not good enough to be a biker. I just don't have the confidence.
When did you start mountain biking?
Oh, probably 5 years ago.
Did you go buy a bike and then go?
Bill Masana and I went and bought bikes together.
Okay, so you didn't try a couple out first.
No.
You actually just said, all right,
do it. And it was because I can't run as well as I used to, and I want the exercise. And I like mountain biking from the standpoint that it really gets my heart rate
up. Oh, man, you go up a hill.
Really, it really is a good workout.
More than bike or than running.
Really. Yes, really it is, because you can't, with running, you can just slow down. With a bike, you got to keep going to a certain level.
Yep.
So I really like that aspect of it, but I just don't have confidence in my physical skills anymore. And so many guys have hurt themselves. I don't need that in life, so... So there you have it.
So we have golf still.
Yeah.
Fishing, you did your share of fishing.
I grew up in southern Idaho among some of the probably premier trout streams of the world.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Henry's Fork of the Snake River and Silver Creek out there by Sun Valley. That's water that's world famous. And that's where I grew up fishing as a kid.
Right.
So I do some fishing.
And so you did a lot of fly fishing as a kid.
Yeah.
Which is pretty unusual back then.
I mean,
you know, fly fishing, really, I always thought of it as, what is it, The River Runs Through It, that movie?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which was probably 90 or
so.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that's when it really sort of took off.
And I kind of, my brother and I laugh about it because we kind of feel the same way, is that it's kind of a, it kind of caught the popular press or something and became kind of the in thing to do.
Right.
Whereas my brother and I have been doing it for 50 years, you know, longer than that, really. And so there's a little bit of snobbishness and purism with my brother and me. And I was talking to him the other day, and he gets so frustrated because it has become so popular that you go out anymore. And I know it used to be you could fish all day long and maybe never see another fisherman, you know. So you get spoiled. And and so he's now at a point where he said, you know, and he's older than I, so he's got some physical limitations, but he said, you know, I go out on the stream and I said, I can't get into any of the holes that I like to fish because there's just too many people. And
is this outside Boise?
Yeah. This is outside Boise. He lives in Boise in the summers, and then they winter in Arizona. But
so probably more crowded than some of the other streams, maybe.
For them, they would. Generally, we would fish up. Virginia's from Pocatello, Idaho, which is just straight north of Salt Lake, and the way to Yellowstone Park. So most of the streams we grew up fishing in our youth were kind of that northeastern corner of the lower part of Idaho, right there in the corner by
the other side of Yellowstone, right?
Yeah, Yellowstone.
The other side of the range.
And or a little bit further west, up towards the Sun Valley area.
Okay.
And those are the streams that we tended to fish, and my brother still fishes. In Boise, it's wonderful. You can go out on the South Fork of Boise, or used to be able to. You go on the South Fork of the Boise River at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and, you know, you take a nice little dinner and you fish until it gets dark, and, of course, that in the summer it's late, and then you have your little picnic lunch and all that kind of stuff.
So you did all that as a kid. How about with the crazies? How often have you fished?
Very seldom. Very seldom,
So really, even as an adult, you know, when you go back to Idaho, you haven't really...
Oh, I go, you know, I used to go a couple of times a year with my brother. I would go to Idaho and go up there, and he always had a bunch of buddies, and they would go places, and I'd get invited to these fishing outings and stuff with him. And I kind of haven't gotten into the fishing group with the crazies.
Did you ever go up to Jim's place in Oregon?
Oh, yeah. I go up annually. I go up annually with Jim. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you would do that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And Jim invites me up every year and at least once a year. And I go up when I flip.
Even since in his new house?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. In fact, I was just up there in August.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I do that with Jim. Okay. Regularly and still do, and I'm sure we'll continue to do that.
The best fly fisherman in the group.
Without question.
Yeah.
And so somehow I've kind of gotten onto his cycle, which I love because I love being around Jim. He's just a great guy, and you fish the Mackenzie, it's kind of stupid fishing because it's just full of fish. But as far as, you know, the guys themselves and going up and fishing the lower sack and stuff, I've done it several times, but I'm just kind of we got an empty boat or half of an empty boat and we need help here.
So maybe they'll
call me as a fill-in or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I kind of have, you know, quite honestly, it's such a big production and this and that and the other thing.
It's
very different than kind of the fishing I grew up with.
Right, where you literally just grab the rod as you're leaving the house.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was all you needed.
And you just went out. And the other thing is, I'm used to being a waiter. I'm not used to this float boat thing. Float boats are great because you cover a lot of water and you get to places where you can't.
I've done both. Yeah. Just a couple times.
Yeah.
I would prefer to wade also.
Yeah, yeah.
Although in some streams, again, going back to physical where we are, you have to be really careful.
Actually, yeah. And that's the other thing is, you know, you go out there and those slippery rocks and things like that. I'm not as agile as I used to be.
Right.
So, so fishing is kind of a it's there, but it's a pretty low priority with me.
As opposed to say golf, which is a pretty big priority, I think.
Well, yeah, and you know, really, you think about how lucky can I be to have a wife who likes to play golf.
Right.
So she thinks a Sunday afternoon playing golf is family time. Well, you know, okay, no problem. And you know,
and that's fairly unusual in the group.
It is very unusual. And when we joined Contra Costa, I was the one pushing to join a country club, and we got in with there's a fellow, a local attorney, that he and I are good buddies, and we got talking at lunch one day, and he said, you know, I have no reason to do this, but I kind of like to join a country club. He said, well, you know what, I've been thinking the same thing.
Oh, so, you're in the same club.
Okay. Yeah, and so we said, well, let's go home and tell our wives that, you know, I'm going to go home and tell my wife that, you know, Walt's going to be able to join, and he went home and did the same thing with me, and so we ended up joining Contra Costa at the same time. As it turns out, our wives are good buddies through PTA and stuff like that, which we didn't, Walt and I really didn't know, but we found that out later. Huh. But Virginia just took to it.
This is like mid-90s or something you joined?
Probably. Okay,
about the same time you joined.
About the same time I got involved in the Crazies. I got involved out of Contra Costa. And honestly, she plays more golf during the week than I do.
Right.
But it's great because it's very unusual.
So I know you just got back from a nice trip up north in Canada, in the Northeast. I assume you didn't play any golf?
No. Mm-hmm.
So do you do that? Do you go often with Virginia? When you travel, do you ever play golf in other places?
I mean, and you know, it's funny because I think it was Joe was saying one time, oh, yeah, we got to get a group together and take the wives down like Central California. And he said, we'll go play golf and the wives can go shopping.
That's what Virginia wants to do.
I'm out. There's no way Virginia's going shopping. If we're going to play golf, she's coming. That's how she feels about it. But one of our favorite things in the world to do, Brian, is we go down to Pacific Grove. We've got this bed and breakfast that we like, and we play, you know, Pacific Grove Muni at least once, and then we'll play some other course, you know, there have some nice meals.
Just the two of you.
Just the two of us, yeah, okay. Mostly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if we ever take, like when we go to Oregon and stuff like that, always our golf clubs and a round of golf is part of the
program. A great deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the Joe camp because my wife doesn't golf, so for me it's always guys' trips golfing. Or if the women come, they have to find something else to do.
Yeah.
You're lucky. You're fortunate.
But by the same token, if you and Joe and I went off, I'd have a problem because Virginia's
you're just down. You're negative one. You now have to catch up, right, and bring her in on the next trip.
So it's been good. It's been something that we enjoy doing kind of a nice social outlet. And we made a lot of friends out there, too. So, yes, similar to, Virginia and I are very, very active in the Presbyterian Church in Lafayette and have been for forever. Yeah. And for a long time, that was our major social outlet as well. We just had a lot of friends who were members of the church and did a lot of things with them.
Sure.
And that, we were talking the other day how interesting that is and that it's changed. It's not that we're not still involved, but we're not involved where we used to be. So now we really don't have much social connection with people at the church.
Right.
But our social sphere is Contra Costa and the running group.
How about just real quick, list off the other wives who Virginia's, you feel like, is closest to, or that you as couples, if you do other things with.
We were
like the Becketts, I think. Don't you? No. Okay.
We were very close with Clark and his first wife.
Marilyn. Yeah.
And Virginia and Marilyn were really good buddies.
Okay.
They were really good buddies.
I never really got to know Marilyn.
And she was a wonderful woman. We traveled with Clark and Marilyn and things like that. And Clark and I would put these continuing education. We have to have 40 hours a year of continuing education. We'd put these boondoggle trips to like Banff. And we went to
West Virginia. I remember you went back to
West Virginia and with them and stuff like that. So we were really close with Clark and Marilyn. And And it's interesting because we're cordial with Clark and Lori. She's a wonderful
Right.
woman, but it's so different
Well,
for
yeah,
us. You know how that is.
sure,
But it's
of
none of
course.
my business. I mean, Clark's happier than a pig in a mud puddle, and
Right.
he deserves to be. You know, and
Yeah.
she's a wonderful gal. But we don't travel or anything. But we really don't have. We've traveled some with the Masonas,
Okay.
and Bill and I, of course, work together a lot, so we see it.
Right.
Bill and I have got a lot of stuff going right now, and but no, not too much,
Okay.
interestingly enough.
I do have to ask you, and you can not answer if you don't want to. Is there any date that you think you might retire where you're not working anymore
Well, I used to pretend like that was going to happen,
at
and I have pretty well come to the conclusion that I can't imagine that I'm ever going
all? All
to be
right.
like you and just actually pull the plug.
Or Masana, in fact,
Or,
is actually the guy who finally is, I think, maybe going to
I
stick. He
think
might not.
Masonic is about 40 days away from final retirement. Yeah, but
All right, so no
so
such date for you necessarily.
I can't imagine that I'll ever be fully retired.
All right.
Interestingly enough, though, I mean, everything about an accountant's life is surrounds deadlines. 15th of
Right.
almost every month is a deadline of some kind,
Right.
but the big deadlines are, which everyone knows about, of course, April. But actually, what they don't understand is if you're involved in businesses, March and September
September,
are
yeah.
actually worse than April and
Yep.
October. But certainly, March and April, September and October are the four worst months of the year,
Right.
without question. And we just went for the
I
whole month of
know.
September. I was on vacation the entire month.
That's
And I tell you what, Brian,
the way to work. That's a good work
I
schedule.
didn't pay much attention to emails or anything else while I was
Nice.
gone. And for me to be gone over two major deadlines, September 15th and September 30th, now is a new one. That's pretty big.
It
That's a
is.
pretty big step for me. And
Well, it's a
I was
good
really
step,
kind
and
of
it
proud of it.
also probably just cements the idea you don't really have to retire because you can control how you're working, which is
And
great.
pretty much what I do now is, and once again, you're probably familiar with this, but you know, we've got a million work codes. You got to code all your, first of all, you got to record all your time, and then you got to code as to what you're doing and
Yep.
everything. On my timesheets, I guess that at least 90% of the code, the only code I use is business consulting or individual consulting,
Right.
period. That's basically what I do, is I just kind of am working through business or personal issues with clients that I've worked with for
Yeah, which
30
is
or 40
great.
years. So
Fantastic.
it's not, it's enjoyable, you know.
Yeah.
It gives me something to do. I only work with people that want me there, that
Right.
don't bitch about the bill or any of that kind of stuff. So
Yeah, you know everybody you're working with. It's great. You
yeah,
know, you have a
and kind of know
relationship.
what the, we know what the drill is, and if they don't like it, then I don't do
So I'm going to switch back
it.
to, I know you grew up in Boise specifically, right?
No,
Or
no.
no,
I grew up,
what?
both Virginia and I grew up in southeastern Idaho. She's from
So she's
Pocatello.
Pocatello and you're
I'm from a
from.
little town 25 miles straight north called Blackfoot.
That's right. That's
Yeah.
right. Okay. So the question I want to get to is what brought you to California and when was that and why was that?
Vietnam is the short
I don't think I knew that.
answer.
Really?
And so Virginia and I grew up in southern Idaho, and we met each other. I think I was still perhaps in junior high. She was in high school by that time because she's a year older than I am. But we met at a summer camp just outside of Sunbelt.
Okay.
And her dad was my cabin counselor at this 1 week summer camp.
Huh.
And I got introduced to Virginia because she was good looking and she had this little pixie haircut and cut off jeans and all that stuff, and so, but I kind of got introduced to her. But we live 25 miles apart, and I think you can maybe relate. Well, you're more urban part of Kansas,
Suburban. I was in
but I mean, you
suburban, yeah.
know, there are places. 25 miles,
25 miles is a long
it's
ways.
23 miles of nothing
Yeah,
but agricultural fields, and then you're
sure.
at these two sounds. So we were buddies, but we weren't boyfriend, girlfriend, or anything like that.
Okay.
But we always kept in touch, and we'd write letters back and forth and this and that and the other thing. And So she then went to nursing school in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, it's almost it's not a college. It was not a college thing at that point. It was called a diploma program, but they went year round for
Huh.
36 months.
Okay.
Or no, yeah, 36 months. So it was 3 years
And this is straight
straight,
out of high school.
right out of
So
high
directly
school.
there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she graduated from high school a year before I did. Then she went
Right.
through a 3-year program there in Portland. So she's out of school 2 years before I graduated from
Yeah.
college.
Yeah.
And so she was working but so I went.
So you're saying you never dated at that time? You're still
Oh,
just.
well, we didn't date in high school. We did not date in
Okay.
high school.
Right.
After, so it was probably about the time that she, well, no, it was probably before she graduated from nursing school.
When you got a
But
little
it
more
was, but it,
serious.
she was probably in her second year of nursing school already by this time. And interestingly enough, she's in Portland, Oregon, and my brother at the time was working in Salem, Oregon. And I went over to Salem one time and I called her up and said, "Hey, I'm coming over and could we get together?" And that probably was one of our first like
Official
dates,
dates.
you
Yeah,
know.
yeah.
But at any rate, one thing led to another, as those things do. But in the meantime, I'm in at the University of Idaho, which at the time was the largest institution in Idaho. Idaho State, which was 25 miles away in Pocatello, 25 miles away from my hometown, was Idaho State College up until about 2 years, mid-60s when I graduated from high school.
Okay.
So it was a university by that time, but it was definitely the junior university. And Boise was a junior college. It was Boise Junior
Huh?
College.
Oh,
It was a
interesting.
2-year institution at the time there.
Yeah.
So my brothers went to the University of Idaho. I had two or three uncles that worked at the University of Idaho and all that kind of stuff. So
Right.
there was kind of, and as a state school, I wasn't going anywhere that we had to
Sure.
pay out of state tuition. We didn't have
Sure.
that kind of money. It was that
Right.
simple. And it was either in our household. My dad died when I was very young, and so it was just my brothers and my mom, and so it was very clear. You graduate from high school, you got two choices. You either go to college and
Yeah.
I'll pay for it, meaning mom would pay for the college,
Right.
but you got to go to a state school.
Sure.
The other alternative is you move out of the house and get a job and you're on your own. That was it.
Right.
And so that's kind of an easy choice,
It
right? I'm
is.
not, why would I want to get a job and not go to college? So I go to school, but you know, by that time, this is 66 when I'm going
Okay.
to school,
When you started?
when I started college.
All right, so you were going to graduate in 70 or
I was going
so,
to graduate
if.
in 70.
All
I
right.
did graduate in 70, by the
Okay,
way,
good for
Brian.
you, for
I'd
years.
like to put that on the record. But so, you know, 67 and
Yeah.
68,
Draft is still going on.
Vietnam was really raging,
Sure.
and the draft was a big deal. And that's when they instituted the lottery. And
Right.
then, and so you could get a delay to go to school. It was a 2S was the
Okay.
registration thing. Okay. So I joined ROTC, and I didn't want, and then I got commissioned when in 70.
Okay.
And Vietnam was still going on, so I got a delay to go to graduate school in Eugene. By the time I got out of graduate school, Vietnam was basically over. I had to find a job. I got a job in San
Ah,
Francisco.
nice.
Boom.
Okay.
That's how I ended up in
Okay.
California.
So you really just deferred Vietnam by going to grad school.
Yeah.
And then you did have choices when you got out, or you just San Francisco was the best job,
Well,
or you
it
just.
was kind of a fluke, honestly. We had
Okay,
never,
you
ever.
weren't trying to go to California. You weren't
No,
trying San
absolutely
Francisco
not. In
University.
fact, it
Okay.
was, you know, we're Northwestern people, and you
Right.
know, I figured at most it was going to be Portland or Seattle or someplace like that, you know.
Yeah.
But really, what I wanted to do was get a job in Boise and raise a family, and
Interesting.
just like my brother
Right,
did. That
right.
was that was. I'm an Idaho boy,
But
right?
nope, here you came to San
So, but I got
Francisco
this
and.
job offer from this company down in San Francisco,
All
and
right.
they flew me down. It was a chamber of commerce day. You know, they wined me and dined me, took
Perfect.
me to a fancy place.
Well, the
And
rest is history. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's the rest of history. Right.
We're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay, good.
But it's been really enjoyable talking to you, Charlie.
You're a good interviewer.
Well, thank you.